Wow. And did they say that the future will be natural catastrophes or war and all that sort of awful thing? And did they say there was a way to prevent it?
Well, actually, the Federation as you get into the safe space story, some of the stuff that came from the briefing is that on a regular basis, civilization is knocked down way below its knees on this planet. This planet is kept in a particular time era and at that particular intelligence era to where they never discover who they are or understand what's out there. And so there's a pre-planned shift of the planet's poles that are set in motion, almost like a pre-designed computer program that occurs on a regular basis and wipes out civilizations. Now, in the case of the Safe Space book, it talks about a mission being sent in ahead of time because some things had happened. And I don't want to get in and tell the whole story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Take your whole interview up here. what happens is the Earth is scheduled for a tilt and a reduction of awareness because we're about to discover who we are and what's out there. And it's a lot more than just the activity in the local solar system or the local galaxy.
Yeah.
That the discovery is about. And a mission is sent here by the Federation under the command of Regent Varss to actually tilt the planet ahead of time. But Varss discovers a bit about who he really is and decides not to do that, to help the planet instead and to gather a group of people that know what's going on and to change the course and the destiny, not only of planet Earth, but the entire universe.
Now, did the extraterrestrials tell you that we can prevent this this reset, so to speak, for lack of a better term, or is this just like a is it just going to happen, or is there any way we can get past that?
We can definitely prevent it, and we can definitely work beyond it. And there's absolutely no reason why humanity, and not just humanity on this planet, but humanity at large, can't have a dynamic, creative future rather than one of desolation and destruction.
So you've been in the UFO field for how long? Since the early 70s, you had the experience, but now would you say you're pretty much like deep into the UFO field? How long have you really been what your hourly, like what your hour schedule is like? Is it a full-time gig now for you working in the UFO field, or is it like?
Yeah, it pretty much is, and that's only been since I published the book, which would have been in about June of last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's only been recently that I've been in the UFO field as what I would consider to be a real investigator, and that's why shows like yours and the X Conference and the UFO Conference is just an amazing and wonderful experience for me. To get out there and hear and see and meet these people, you know, and find out the information.
And so you collect a lot of information. What do you think about the big picture now? Do you think we're going to see disclosure in our lifetime, or do you think things are getting so awful on this planet that disclosure is getting further and further away?
Well, and that's a great question. I think that it's possible that we'll see a continuous dribble disclosure information occurring, put out by the powers to be, because I think it's with the advent of the internet, it's impossible to keep this thing covered up. And I think that all of the actions of people like yourself and Steve Nassett and some of the Jaime Masson and AJ and Jim Mars and all the Robert Dean and all the terrific people out there is being taken right to the doorstep of everybody on the entire planet, virtually, that has any level of civilization and technology at all. So it's pretty hard to cover it up. And I think that we are going to see dynamic change also, though, from a political standpoint. I think we face a time when tight political control might throttle everything that we're about to find out.
Yeah, it seems like things are coming to a head here where we're going to find out the answer or all hell's going to break loose.
Yeah. And I hope, and I also hope that we're able to survive some of the natural stuff that's coming, because there is, in my opinion, there's a natural series of events, a course of events that's beginning to take place where we're going to lose a lot of landmass to natural cataclysms. And there's going to be a lot of natural disasters that occur that so many of your psychics and your people who are doing the prophetic things have been talking about for a long, long time. I think that's going to also enter into the equation.
Now, from what the extraterrestrials told you, do you think that they would take the burden of disclosure out of our hands and do it themselves? Or do you think that's going to be dependent upon the Earth governments to disclose?
Well, I'd like to believe that they're going to just land a big spacecraft and, you know, or everyone above every major city out there, but I just don't, I don't have anything to base that on. I think that it has to do with a willingness on our part to do something about it. I don't think that, you know, it's like occupation of a foreign country. If you go in there and you occupy and you try to provide a lifestyle or a way of life or information by force, then usually the population rejects it. And I think they're very, very careful not to do that with us as a species. I think there's the people that are ready for it are listening with open ears, and I think that more and more we're going to see them getting the information, and I think we will see maybe even countries that get disclosure, and I think it's going to be very difficult for a country like the United States to continue to ignore it, and that is what's happening now, as you know.
Yeah, it seems like some of the other countries in the world are sort of forcing the hand of the United States, like India and Brazil and some of those other countries that are having the ET experiences. They're sort of leaking out more and more information, and the U.S. government hasn't, they just sort of ignore it, but it's getting out there to us and stuff, so.
Yeah, I also don't think it's any accident that the shuttle program is being shut down, you know. I think that we're under very heavy, strict control.
Quarantine,
yeah. As Deerdorf and Maccabee and some of them put off would say, definitely a quarantine. And I think that we're dealing with a large number of races and species. And I think that they all have their own agenda, and I think there's an over-governing body at many different levels.
And did they say to you that at some point we'll be allowed into this government?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that part of the problem and part of the struggle that has taken place and is taking place now is that there's more than one government, and there are two forces that are at odds with each other.
Really?
Absolutely.
And
I call them the Federation and the Confederation.
Okay.
And I think that the Federation, again, is outlined in the book, is very determined to control everything. And because, you know, with control, they can predict the future virtually 100%. With 100% control, but that's not necessarily the way an individual, a being who has the ability to create change and experience things at so many different levels, necessarily wants to live totally controlled. And I think that's the struggle that's going on the highest level.
And did you get any indication of which side is you know, good or bad, malevolent or benevolent, or it's sort of like they just each have their own agenda and they just conflict in certain areas?
Yeah, I think it basically has to do, going back with free will, the individual has the right and the choice of free will whether or not they want to live in this totally structured manner, where everything is clearly defined and the rules are the rules, or if they want to have a little room for independent thought and action.
And do they let you know if what's that?
How about you, Tim? You want to live in a totally structured environment, or do you want a little independent thought and action?
Oh, man, I'll take the independent thought and action any day of the week.
That's why you're on planet Earth, buddy.
Oh, no. I guess I'm stuck here, then.
Yeah, well, not forever, probably.
Probably not.
Yeah. Not if we can get it in gear and get free of the box.
Yeah, well, you know, we're all sort of like pulling on the cart here, and hopefully we can get it up the hill.
It's like a big video game in a way.
How so?
Yeah, well, it's a virtual reality game that we've got ourselves involved in there.
That's for sure.
And we get lots of options and choices, right?
Oh, all kinds of choices. Did the extraterrestrials, did they give you any indication if they're in contact with the U.S. government at all, or is it sort of just to an individual citizenry type of thing?
Yeah, I didn't get an indication of that, but, you know, my research since that time, I can give you my opinion.
That's valuable.
Well,
you know,
my opinion is that they've definitely been in contact with our government. And I think that there's substantial documentation, you know,
if
an individual wants to look. The great, great presentations that we heard at the X conference, you know, so much proof. And, you know, on the Black Vault, there's all the documents there that if a person wants to go to the problem or take the time to do the investigation themselves, you know, they can find out that the government has thousands of pages of documents dealing with UFOs within its own internal structure.
And after the early 70s, you knew this ET phenomenon was real. So in the last 30 years, I think personally, from what my research and everything has been, that there's been a conditioning process going on. You've probably seen it firsthand. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And you think, what do you think of that? Do you think it's turning out successful, and that it's getting the people ready for disclosure?
Well, I think that people are much more ready for disclosure. And one of the things that people that have small children and watch the cartoon channels, they see that the cartoons, in many, many cases now, are made up of not necessarily all humanoid critters, you know.
Yeah.
There's a variety of alien-looking forms there that the younger generation have been exposed to. And as you say, I've watched for 30 years and all the different movies and the different things that come out. And I think that the planet is being conditioned to accept the reality of another level of species out there that has been interacting with us for millions of years.
And how do you think the public reaction would be to something like that if and when they're told?
I don't know if you can just use a blanket number or figure on that, but I think that a lot of it depends if we're told that we have a space-based enemy who's been abducting our people and are in the process of trying to take over the planet or dominate the planet. Then I think that the reaction will be one of fear and a great deal of hesitation. On the other hand, if we're told, and it's kind of the feeling that you get from Jaime Masson, that he feels that there's a benevolent intelligence out there that's seeking to uplift and help the planet. If it comes across that way, if it's presented that way, and if in reality it is that way, then I think the reaction would be pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think there's an inherent danger with disclosure because, you know, if it's disclosed by the government, we're at the mercy of their intent. So if they're looking to increase their defense budgets and what have you, they could easily say that we were under attack by the extraterrestrials. When to the people who aren't as educated as you and me on the subject, they'll might buy it hook, line, and sinker when we might know it's not true at all. So there's a danger there, don't you think?
Yeah, there's a huge danger there. As Michael Sala said, $1.7 trillion a year is being put into the black budgets, you know, which is a just incredible amount of money. And I doubt that we have any idea how far that money has gone to advance the level of technology and sophistication that our governments now possess. I would say that we already have the teleportation devices. We are also already involved interdimensionally with planets and different parts of the system. Not only our local system, but some of the far-reaching galaxies out there. And I think that, you know, we're already there, and the governments are doing those things, and the population is the last to know.
And, all right, Ron, I saw this on your website. I was looking at it, the virtual concept of the Genesis 2.
Right.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about that, because that was pretty interesting. I thought that might be something that doesn't get talked about much with the whole ET phenomenon thing. So what's that all about?
Well, Genesis 2 is the idea that a group of people could come together and create a community-styled environment somewhere in the world. Ideally, tropical islands always appeal to me, and I've lived on some islands. But because there you generally have abundant natural gifts, you know, which are like the soil will grow, wonderful food and vegetables. You've got rain usually, you've got fresh water. And it was the idea to bring together a community of people who would actually develop a community somewhere in the world, and that would be called Genesis 2. And there they would have education that would, you know, would not be selective education. You'd get the actual facts. You'd also have advanced structures and technologies. Over the course of the years, having lived on boats, to where you had to be totally self-sufficient, you know, there's water generation equipment and machinery. There's wind energy. There's solar energy. There's so many non-polluting, wonderful ways to live that we just don't practice when we live in these cities and we live the way we live now in the traditional Western civilization. And I've experienced the fact that people can live at a different harmonic out there, and the food doesn't have to be chemically sprayed, and you know, the soil doesn't have to be depleted of all of its nutrients. I think there's things that can be done in all the sciences, including the natural medications and things. I don't think we have to die at 73 years of age. I think that there's life extension and a community that comes together that has the right type of people can bring all those ingredients together and have a wonderful way of life as a model. It shows that other people can do it as well. It could happen here in even in our own cities.
Now, this is sort of an odd question, really, I guess, but you probably get it a lot. After your encounter, who did you tell? Your family or your friends or anything right away, or did you sort of keep it to yourself?
No, actually, I did tell a couple of people, and for a couple of weeks, it was like my feet weren't even touching the ground. I had a very difficult time adjusting to the reality, and I began to write all this down. And I actually wrote like a 95 or 100 page manuscript within a period of 6 or 7 months there.
Oh, wow.
And then published it. And then, of course, after publishing it, on a limited scale, it was distributed to bookstores. And a producer happened to pick it up and read it, and then Columbia bought it. So I told I told quite a few people, and of course a lot of people thought I was nuts. And I really didn't care because I was so convinced of it.
Yeah.
Of its reality.
Yeah.
It was so real to me. Just like it's real to me now, even after, 34 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when we were corresponding over the past few months, and you were in Germany. What were you doing over in Germany?
Well, that's part of the documentary project. As a result of the book being published, we connected up a group of people, which is fairly small but hardworking, and we've bought motion picture equipment. We've bought the latest HD cameras and lighting and microphones, and we went out and we began to do the recording of the different experts on the field of ufology, because we felt like this is probably the single item that is suppressing most of the change on the planet. So I went to Germany. We shot the interviews. We went over there to shoot some more footage and to do some more interviews and to work with the one of the senior editors on the project, who's a very interesting fellow. He's an ex-Russian MiG pilot.
Wow.
Who's also, his name is Stoyan, and he's in Bulgaria. He came to Germany for a little over a month. And my associate producer there, Bruce Jessup in Germany, has a facility, and we put together a set where we're in teleprompters, and we have some of the on-set stuff. Another associate, Pete, is a musician from London. He's also doing some editing, and he's doing the camera work. I have a son, Anthony, who's in Phoenix, and he has been shooting and helping on the project as well. He was a cameraman. You met him
yep.
at the X conference.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
But Germany was about 30 days of working on the script and developing the project and editing and shooting, and there's still more to do.
Oh, wow. Now, did Bruce and I think he said the other guy's name was Pete.
Stoyan.
And Stoyan. Did they all have the same experience that you did, or did they just read the book and wanted to help out and join up with the Safe Space project?
Right. Actually, Bruce originally connected up after I did Art Bell on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
He gave me a call, and he said that he had, he saw the picture of the vessel, the Safe Space 1, which is on the cover of the book. He said that it just struck a chord with him. He'd seen the ship before. He studied a lot of the Eastern meditation yoga for over 25 years, and is also very, very knowledgeable on the whole ufology field and a lot of the other fields which the Safe Space project wants to get into, which is alternative health and a lot of the alternative energy and the different approaches. And Bruce is a very well-read and experienced individual in all those fields. And he kind of like was the group leader that pulled together a number of the other individuals to come and help. And was at his place there in Lübeck, Germany, that we have been working here the last month.
Well, Germany must have been nice in the summertime like that, huh?
Oh, it was beautiful over there. It's right on the Baltic Sea, Lübeck is, and it rains there about every day or every other day, and the weather's nice and mild. Yeah, beautiful city.
Now, after your encounter, did you ever have any run-ins with the government, Men in Black type situations, or any threats or anything like that?
You know, I never did, and part of it probably was because most of the time I was pretty silent about the project, other than going through the period of time with Columbia Pictures and that whole experience. And then a couple of times I decided I would build some prototype vessels, and always at the back of my mind was the desire to build a larger ship or to do the movie. But no, I've never had any Men in Black experiences.
Well, that's good.
Say.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And after this first Fast Walkers files project on ufology, what are some of the other topics you guys are planning on covering? Do you have like a sequel plan already in mind? Or
I think we're going to look at chemtrails.
Oh, wow.
Is another one that is going to be addressed. Alternative health. There's an amazing amount, as you know, I'm sure, of alternative medicine out there.
Oh, yeah.
That we just don't know about. Alternative energy, I've worked with a little bit with a fellow by the name of Robert Cook that has designed a motor that produces the energy that would drive not only a vessel like the Say Space One, but also a spacecraft without any fuel at all. And it's he's a dynamic inventor and has a lot of knowledge not only of spin dynamics. He has a prototype engine that will produce power to power everything from generators to saltwater desalinators, power spacecraft. That's the Cook engine, and that's one of the devices that we want to promote and to actually create a prototype of.
Wow. And let me throw it back a little bit to your encounter. I got a couple of little follow-up questions here. You said you thought it felt like about 8 or 9 hours?
Yeah, at least that, yeah.
And did you eat anything?
We went to the briefing. I also went out to the beach and spent some time at the beach.
Okay, yeah, I remember you said
just,
that.
Just enjoying the phenomenal energy and the environment there that was there on the planet Jupiter.
Was it like a city there by the beach? Or?
Yeah. There sure was. It was. People have asked me about the buildings and the structures, and I would just have to say they were made of a white, kind of like composite material, it appeared. I don't think it was what you would be concrete, but again, I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. I was more involved in just listening and experiencing than looking at studying the architecture.
And you didn't talk to any of the other people, like the humans that were there. You just didn't. Were they in as much awe as you were about what was going on, or did they seem sort of just like old hat to them? What was their reaction? Have you even noticed it?
You know, I didn't even notice it. My time was spent basically with the person that was my guide, and. I in the book I call her Kalina, as far as a name goes, but she was there with me throughout the entire experience, and it was almost like although I was part of a larger group, I had a person that was assigned to make sure that the knowledge or the information was imparted to me, and there was. Most of it was just the pure amazement, Tim, of me trying to accept that this reality was even occurring. And that extended even to the time out on the beach, you know, where I said, you know, this is, I know this is happening, but it's so just incredible. I just... I don't know what to...
Yeah, it must be pretty startling. You must have been just trying to figure out I can't even imagine, you know. I wish it would happen to me.
I wish it would, too.
See if you can pull some strings for me, you know?
Yeah.
I'd be more than happy to take a trip. Now, right. Did you eat at all while you were there? Did you go to the bathroom? Like, your everyday type of thing. Did you do anything like that while you were there, or was that all sort of, like, pushed to the side?
Yeah, not to my recollection, yeah.
So no eating or anything like that?
Yeah, no. That's a good question, though. Again, it seemed like, you know, there was a time dilation, but... And it seemed to me that it was 8 or 9 hours. But again, in reality, it was 33 minutes. The reason I knew that, when I came back aboard, I looked at my clock.
And no one, and was there anyone else on the boat when you left?
Yes, there was. My partner was on the boat, and he was still asleep. And when I got back to the boat, he was pounding on my stateroom door, calling my name.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she had told me that there was somebody
looking for you.
Yeah, wanted me.
Did they give you any indication about the other alien races that we've heard about, like the Greys or the Reptilians or any of the other stuff?
They sure didn't.
Did you mention anything like that?
No. Except that I know that there had been a lot of contact with this planet from other races, from the local and nearby sectors, which kind of goes back to some of the stuff that's in the book, has to do with what Sitchin would call the Neophim, or the Bible talks about them coming here, and the engineering of the human species as biological entities or servants or workers, you know, to work in the gold mines, to extract the gold from the planet Earth, which appears to be very valuable to spacefaring civilizations.
Yeah. Now, from just your own research and general opinion type of stuff, what do you think of the abduction phenomenon in general?
Well, I think there's definitely a very real component there. I think that a lot of people have been abducted. I think that many of them have been abducted against their will. I guess by definition, abduction would be against your will. But I mean, in interviewing the one fellow, Stephen Jones there at Laughlin, he said he turned from a person who was an abductee to a participator, that he actually participated willingly after his first couple of abductions. That they're actually trying to upgrade the human being, the species, for its own good. So I think there's probably some of that going on, and I think that there also has been in the past some of it going on where it wasn't necessarily for our own good.
Yeah. Is there anything that you're looking for help, or how can people help out with this movement and help get things going here?
Well, what we're really working on now, Tim, is the Fastwalker Files, the documentary on disclosure. And we really support the disclosure movement on a worldwide basis, and we invite individuals, if they have any clips, UFO clips, or if they have access to stills of UFOs that they would allow us to use within the context of the documentary, please get in touch with us. And also, if they have interest in the overall project, there is no charge to join or become a Safe Space team member. Basically, it's just an agreement that you'll support the goals of disclosure and work towards a better planet. And some of that is on the website. So.
And give the URL in case, sometimes, you know,
yeah,
the MP3 is
www.safespaceproject.com. SAFESPACE project, project.com.
When do you expect that first Fastwalker's Files thing to be out?
We want to have our documentary finished and on the market as a DVD prior to the Christmas season. So hopefully we'll be looking October, November.
Who are some of the names in ufology that you have in the Fastwalker Files in the first edition here?
Well, there's a wide variety of different individuals, but Robert, Command Sergeant Robert Dean is in there. Michael Sala, who is very involved in the exopolitic movement. Also, Alfred Weber. Dolores Cannon. Dr. Lynn Horowitz, who is very interesting, talking about population control, some of the things that are going on. Wendell Stevens, Jim Mars, Sean David Morton, who's interestingly very prophetic individual. Stephen Jones, who is an abductee from London. H.H. Gavard. Charles Hall and Paula Harris, who have a very, very interesting story that he told. Jaime Masson from Mexico, Dr. Richard Boylan. Also, Stephen Bassett, who put on the X Conference, did a great job of it. Monsignor Peraldo Balducci, of course, also covered the entire press conference, which, as you know, had a large number of individuals, but in-depth interviews with James Dierdorf, Bruce McAbee. Got some clips. We're in the process of editing, so some of these names, I think I'm giving you ones that will actually be in the documentary. Stanton Friedman, a good interview with Stanton, John Greenwald of Black Vault.
So you got quite an international contingent of people in this thing with AJ, he's from Brazil, and Jaime Masson's from Mexico, and Corrado Balducci's from Italy, and Dr. Michael Sal is from Australia originally. So that's quite a worldwide scope of experts here for this. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, we wanted to give it a broad international approach because you know, the UFO phenomena, as you know, is from the standpoint of the average American, we don't really get to hear much unless we happen to tune in to Peter Jennings, you know?
Yeah.
We still didn't hear much.
I know, we didn't get much from him anyway.
Yeah. But, no, we've got a good list of very dynamic and informed people who have really made it their way of life to investigate this phenomenon and bring the information forward.
And, how about for a final question, what would you say to the young generation like myself? I'm only 26 years old. You know, the future, I'm not sure if it looks bright or if it looks dark, but, you know, what kind of advice would you give for someone who's just beginning in the field and starting to chase after these answers?
Well, I think, Tim, what you're doing is terrific, that you're actually providing an information conduit out there. Using the most modern technology in the world, the internet, to take and bring the truth to people who are interested in hearing about it. So I would encourage everyone, you know, to ask the questions. Just don't accept the standard dribble of denial that's coming out. To look beyond the surface. And to get the information firsthand, to search things out for themselves, and to try to tune in on what's going on an international basis. And that's not necessarily easy. We thank God for the internet.
That's for sure. And the book is Safe Space, and where can you get that, Amazon?
You can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it from the publisher, which is iUniverse.com.
Okay.
But Amazon's got a good price on it and good delivery times. And
nice. And your website's safespaceproject.com, right?
You bet, safespaceproject.com. Hey, I really admire you for putting your show together and your website. I've been on your site, and it's an interesting site. And look forward to see what you're doing with this next series of interviews.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being a part of it. Probably a story that I haven't really told. I might have mentioned it in the first interview, but I think it's worth mentioning here in the second one for the people that are listening at home, is that when I showed up in Washington for the second X conference this past April, I think you were probably one of the first three people I met, and you were and you and your son, and you guys were amazingly kind and generous and accommodating to me the whole weekend. And the UFO field is, it's very cliquish. And it's very, you know, tribal, as Michael Sell said to me once when we were talking about it. And you guys really opened up your arms to me and sort of, like, helped me out an awful lot. So I really appreciate that. I'll always remember that. So, you know, when I started putting together this list of people to be a part of the first series of interviews for the website, you were definitely on the top of the list. And I want to thank you for you know, giving me all this time to talk about your experience and your work and your upcoming film. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it. And I'm sure the people who are listening to the interview at home are definitely interested in seeing it.
Hey, well, it's been a privilege and a pleasure to work with you. And I know it wasn't an easy job at the X Conference because you were trying to get your interviews done, and everybody was trying to do what they had to do and man their tables and make their talks, but you're a pleasure to work with, and I wish you the very best of luck, and I want to thank you for having me as a guest.
Well, thanks a lot.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio, Season 1. I want to thank Robert Miles for sitting down and talking to us. Also want to thank Leslie and Chiron from banalofamerica.com for your continued help and support with the website. And, of course, I want to thank all you great listeners out there. Thanks for downloading the episodes, listening to them, spreading the word. If you like what you hear, you know, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your loved ones, put it up on your blog or your website. And, you know, keep the word going around here for Banal of America Audio Season 1. We got some big things planned, some great guests upcoming. Next week, Greg Bishop. He's the author of the critically acclaimed book Project Beta. It's the story of Paul Benowitz. Everybody was talking about it last spring. It's still going around. Everybody was raving about this book. And, crazily enough, Greg Bishop will be joining us here at Banal of America Audio Season 1 next week, part one of a marathon session. 3 hours plus that we got with Greg Bishop. We're going to run the first half next week, the second half the week after that. So come by next week on October 15th to banalofamerica.com for Banal of America Audio Season 1. Until then, this is Tim Banal signing off.